From WBEZ Chicago, it's The Morning Shift. I'm Tony Sarabia. Construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline was halted over the weekend, a big victory for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and their supporters. Today on the show, we digest the news with the head of Chicago's American Indian Center and a local musician who took part in the protests in North Dakota. Later, why the number of black teachers is on the decline and what we can do about it. But first, the state of Illinois' budgetary woes. You know, there hasn't been a budget for nearly a year and a half, and since June, we've been operating on a temporary spending plan known as a stopgap. But forget all of that for a minute, because there's a bigger problem, major structural problems with the state's long-term finances. As a pair of new reports from the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois points out, there are some potential fixes for those problems, but they come with some political consequences. David Merriman is professor of public administration at the University of Illinois at Chicago and co-author of the reports. He's here now to lay out some tough choices politicians would have to make to ensure solvency a decade out. Welcome to the program.
Thanks. Nice to be on the show.
Okay, so as I mentioned, you know, this stopgap, it expires at the end of December. Just give us a quick idea what happens after that. I'm sure you've been keeping a close watch on all of this.
Right. Well, after that, the we really don't have authority to do a lot of spending. We don't have legal. The governor won't have legal authority to do a lot of spending. Some spending has been continued anyway because of various court orders and federal regulations. But it's very unclear what will happen, for instance, to funding for universities, for funding for a lot of nonprofit vendors, contracts for vulnerable populations.
But even if we even if the governor and the Democrats in charge agree on a budget, as I pointed out, as you guys point out in the study, there are going to be problems down the road for probably the next decade because of this phrase, structurally imbalanced budget. What does that mean?
Well, the fundamental problem, there are really two fundamental problems today with the budget. One is that our expenditures exceed the revenues that we're bringing in, we think, by about $13 billion in fiscal year 2017, which is the fiscal year we're currently in. And the second problem is that based on historical patterns, spending is growing more rapidly than revenues. So even if we do something to increase revenues, it's not going to bring the budget back into balance unless we also slow the rate of spending or increase the rate at which revenues increase.
Okay, so those are some – I mean, those choices have been with us, those tough choices, for a long time. It's like priorities, right? What do we cut and how do we raise money?
Right. Yeah, those are fundamental choices. The problem's gotten much worse, though. That's what we've documented. We've been doing this since 2008, trying to track the budget. And, the deficits have grown really substantially. Now we're talking, as I said, about a $13 billion deficit on about $72 billion of spending. Mm-hmm. So it's just a yawning gap. And, you know, we haven't done anything about revenues. For a year and a half, we've had the tax rate fall from the personal income tax rate fall from 5% to 3.75%. That's put a bigger gap in the budget. We have a lot of unpaid bills, probably at least $10 billion of unpaid bills, et cetera. So we have a lot of problems that we have to fix. It's going to take big changes, and it's going to take some time to do it.
You said you've been looking at this since 2008?
That's right.
So is that when the problem that we see today really occurred? I mean, of course, 2008 being the fallout and the recession that followed.
No, actually, and I should say we started the Fiscal Futures Project in 2008. I wrote my first paper about this in 2000. I published a paper talking about the budget problems in the state of Illinois. Some of my colleagues even went back before that. So it's been a very long time in coming. But we've been studying it intensively since 2008.
Well, has it only gotten worse since that first paper in 2000? What's changed and what's the same?
Yeah, it's basically gotten worse since that time. I think a few things have made it worse. One is the political gridlock is even stronger than it is now. Sort of the inability to do anything about tax policy has become stronger. Partly there's been inflation in medical care costs that has been relatively rapid. That's been a big part of the state's budget. And we've come to recognize the pension underfunding. And now we're starting to rectify it, but we came to recognize the pension underfunding in that period. So all of those things have made it more challenging.
So, you know, I was wondering, okay, if we continue to do what we're doing by operating without a budget, you know, by maybe passing another stopgap measure, how worse are we making the problem long term?
Well, the figures that we have show that if we basically operate as we have been historically, the deficit we expect to rise to about $22 billion by 2017. Now, as I said, it's about $13 billion according to our figures now. So, yeah, it's gonna get worse, and it's probably not sustainable is the truth. Right now, we have a lot of unpaid bills to vendors. We haven't been paying public employees health care costs. People are going to stop working with them if we don't pay,
yeah.
and it's gonna slow the economy still more of the state. So we really can't continue on the current path.
We're talking about Illinois' finances and how 10 years out they could still be as bad as they are if we don't make some changes outlined in a report by the University of Illinois. David Merriman is the professor in the Department of Public Administration at UIC, and he's one of the co-authors of the report. Okay, so let's talk about solutions, because this is where the tough choices are going to be have to be made. And you and your co-authors say, look, we gotta start doing this like right away.
Right. I think we got to do it right away. And we have to do multiple things, and we have to be persistent about them. So the options that we looked at are cutting spending. We have to understand that some categories of spending really cannot be cut. Those include, servicing the debt. We've borrowed from bondholders. We have to pay those back regardless of the condition we're in.
So you split it up between what's called discretionary and non-discretionary. Non-discretionary right. would be the two things that you mentioned, the pensions and the bonds?
Pensions and bonds are two of the big things. We also put in non-discretionary transportation spending, since in November we passed a constitutional amendment which segmented that off. We also put education spending in non-discretionary. Technically, it's discretionary, but there's mm-hmm. clearly no appetite to cut funding for local schools from the state. So those are the big items. Discretionary is everything else, which turns out to be less than half of the budget. And we talked about cutting the rate of growth in those by 2% a year, which might not sound like much, but over 10 years, we'd have 20% less spending on those categories than we would in the absence of that that policy.
It's less than half of the budget? Is that less than half? Is that what's causing all of these problems?
Well,
big part of it?
Partly it is, right. We've made commitments in the past, and there are things that we cannot cut because of various we've had various obligations to different groups of people, mm-hmm. to local government, to the Medicaid population is another big one that I should put in there. And so, yes, that definitely constrains what the legislature can do about cutting spending.
Okay, so let's talk about tax increases. How do we see that unfolding between now and, say, the next 5-6 years?
So we looked at a number of categories of tax increases, including raising the personal income tax rate by 1% from 3.75% to 4.75%, doing a similar raise in the corporate income tax rate, expanding the tax base, the personal income tax base, to tax retirement income, which most states do. Illinois does less of that than other states. Expanding the sales tax base to tax some services, again, which most states do. Illinois does less of that. So we looked at all of those policies individually and also combined. And none of those policies individually get us close to balance. Even if we combine them, we get a lot of revenue from that. Still not enough. And a big problem with it is it doesn't grow fast enough. So if we do those policies and persist in them, we're still going to continually be behind.
I want to break down a couple of these, but I just want to remind people that we are talking about Illinois' precarious financial situation and how it could remain the same or even get worse if we don't do something immediately. A couple of new reports take a look at what needs to be done to make us solvent in about 10 years. It's The Morning Shift. I'm Tony Sarabia. So taxing retirement income, that seems to be almost one of those political third rails.
Right. And it's a little curious that it is in Illinois because a lot of other states do that. We do that at the federal level. So Illinois is really an outlier. And it's certainly possible that we could exempt some retirement income as the federal government does to help out low-income people. But the exemption of retirement income really has nothing to do with your income level. We shouldn't think of it as having anything to do with progression of the income tax.
But there is a way, and this comes to the part of the report where you talk about mechanisms, because a lot of times, given what you just said about that example, taxing retirement income, a lot of politicians in Springfield are loath to bring it up because it could get them in trouble with their constituents. But as you and Professor Dye talk about, there are ways to ensure that some of these things do happen, so perhaps politicians don't face as tough of a consequence as they may if there weren't these trigger mechanisms, as you talk about.
Right. So the problems that we're having in Illinois are not unique to Illinois. They've happened in other areas as well. And other states and other governments have looked at various kinds of mechanisms to say, okay, suppose we come up with a compromise. Suppose we agree we're going to raise revenue and we're going to slow spending. How do we get to stick to that? How do we build confidence among the different competing parties that, we really want to stick to that mechanism? And one possibility is to build in some kind of rules so that if you violate an agreement or you don't meet the agreed targets, something happens to something, an event is triggered, which puts you back on track. So some of the kinds of things that I've been looking at is mechanisms that would say if the budget gets more than a certain amount of out of whack, there's an automatic cuts that go into place or there's automatic tax increases that go into place.
This isn't a really new idea. How come here in Illinois some of these mechanisms haven't been instituted? I mean, I think you mentioned the amendment that was just passed. That's kind of a mechanism, right? It says any money that's raised from the gas tax needs to go to roads.
Right. So we do that kind of earmarking, and actually we do quite a lot of that in Illinois, mm-hmm. as do other states. Part of the reason I think those things are so popular is because people aren't willing to agree to an increase in a thing like the gas tax unless they know it's going to go for a specified purpose. They're afraid it will be spent on something that they don't approve of. That in a lot of ways, though, goes in exactly the wrong direction in terms of making the whole budget in balance. So we've done a lot of that, kind of one might even call it a special interest kind of funding. But what we haven't done is look at the broad general thing. Why hasn't it happened in Illinois? I'm not 100% sure about that.
We have one of our listeners who has a question from you, Tom from Lincoln Park. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the Morning Shift.
Hey, thanks for taking the call.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, as we're looking at these big picture fixes for Illinois and Chicago, I wonder why you're not considering a financial transaction tax that would be placed on trades down at LaSalle Street and a public bank for the state of Illinois, one that works very well for North Dakota. Why aren't you thinking about those and helping us have a good conversation about them?
Well, thanks for that question. We didn't really scour the solutions. There are a couple of taxes that would be instituted. I don't recall seeing the one that Tom mentioned.
No, we've never looked at a transaction tax, and there wouldn't be within our the structure that we have set up for our model to be able to cost out a transaction tax. It hasn't there isn't one in the United States, so we wouldn't be able to give good numbers of it. I will say the specifics that we look at are much less important than the general structure. The idea is that we need a long-term solution. We need a commitment.
And nothing in isolation.
Nothing in isolation. And I think we're going to have to look at both spending and revenue together. And what we really need is a long-term commitment. So, some other kinds of taxes, there's lots of taxes we didn't look at.
You mentioned in the mechanisms part, there are quite a few, the pay-as-you-go model, budget sequestration, which is on the federal level. There's a Budget Control Act. There are a couple of amendments. But was curious, toward the end of that part of the report, it says that budget enforcement mechanisms something about that they wouldn't do much.
Well, unfortunately, the historical experience has been that most of the budget enforcement mechanisms that have been tried, for instance, at the federal level in the United States and in other states, the rigorous kind of academic research generally shows that they don't really work that well. They don't do that much to control spending. So, I think what we basically need, we need real political commitment to say that we're going to do a long-term plan. And I think these budget enforcement mechanisms can be somewhat helpful, but they're not going to work in the absence of political commitment.
So do you think that political commitment is going to be forthcoming anytime soon?
Well, I think the most important thing actually is for the voters and the populace to understand the depth of the problem. That's why I'm on the show today. And to tell their legislators, we know you're going to give us bad news. We know you're probably going to have to raise our taxes and possibly also cut our spending. And we're going to support you in doing that, but we want you to be serious about it. We want you to really fix the problems.
Professor Merriman's advice: call your lawmaker. David Merriman, professor in the Department of Public Administration at the University of Illinois in Chicago, talking about a couple of reports showing that things need to be done now if we want to even reach solvency within 10 years here in Illinois. It's part of the Fiscal Futures Project. Thanks so much for stopping by and talking about a very important issue here.
Great to talk to you. Thanks.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, why Chicago has so few African-American teachers and the challenges that poses for those already among the ranks. Don't go anywhere.